The Character Sketch of Yank. Introduction. The Key Figure. Like Marlowe's Dr. Foster's, O'Neill's The Hairy Ape is the story of a gigantic personality, Robert Smith, popularly called Yank in the play. There are a few other characters to contribute to the development of the action in the play. Among them, Long has a pretty long part, for he accompanies Yank to Fifth Avenue after filling his mind with the sense of class conflict. He tries to keep Yank in order too. The next is Paddy, who remains lost in the dreams of past golden days. It is a very interesting fact about this play that Mildred, the only young and attractive female figure, does not hold the proud place of being the heroine. In the life of the hero, Yank, she plays a negative role. Her reaction to Yank's appearance is so dispelling that Yank's whole being is shaken. He wishes to identify his belonging. Mildred, too, has not a long part in the play, though her role is important. Her father, Mr. Douglas, is mentioned repeatedly, but his direct entry is avoided in the play. Yank, the source of the character. O'Neill had experience as a sailor and as an inhabitant, resident of New York's waterfront. As a sailor on SS New York, he got direct experience of the stokehold and stokers working in it. O'Neill felt much impressed seeing their devotion to duty and ability to work in excessive heat. An Irish stoker named Driscoll became his close friend. His strong body and positive attitude to labor impressed O'Neill very much. Driscoll was proud of his strength and labor. He had a great pride in his sense of belonging. Other stokers acknowledged his superiority and regarded him as his superior. O'Neill modeled a character after him. Matt Brooke, an Irish stoker in his play Anna Christ, but after a long O'Neill came to know that Driscoll died by committing suicide. It inspired O'Neill to compose an independent play on the life and death of a stalker, having Driscoll's strong personality. It is the source of Yank's character. Next heading, Yank's personality, his superiority. According to O'Neill, some qualities of personality are common in all stalkers. All of them are shouting, cursing, laughing, and singing. The confused noise gives impression as he beats in a cage where roaring. Nearly all the men are drunk. Many bottles are passed from hand to hand. All are dressed in rough trousers and heavy, ugly shoes. Most of them are stripped to the waist. All are hairy-chested with long, strong arms but small, angry eyes. In color of hair, skin, eyes, all these men are alike. Still, Yank looks differently from them. He seems broader, fiercer, more truculent, more powerful, more sure of himself than the rest. Yank is more quarrelsome and aggressive than others. He is more strong and self-confident than others. He is more strong and self-confident than others. These qualities make him superior to other stalkers. They fear him and pay respect. He has become their representative and enjoys himself in this authority. When stalkers make a great noise, his authority is exposed. Yang takes notice of the uproar. Using his authority, he asks them to keep quiet. Next heading, his anti-romantic nature. Yang is anti-romantic in the sense that he has no affection for home and no interest in a woman. He loves songs but in praise of whiskey. When a stalker grows sentimental enough to sing of his beloved and home, Yang grows angry, for he does not approve this sentimental viewpoint. Yang asks the stalker to stop singing, for home is no better than hell. To them, the ship is their home. It fulfills all of their necessities of life. With a sense of pride, he tells them that he left home in his childhood. He got only beating there. Since he left home, nobody could ever beat him. He challenges them to fight him if any of them is willing to beat him. He knows that nobody has this courage. He passes satire on the false sentiment that a girl could be waiting at home. He claims that it is an illusion, for girls wait for none. They are no better than prostitutes. Just for a small coin, they grow eager to betray the old lover. He claims that he always treats them roughly. All of them are faithless enough never to be trusted. His scorn for women is exposed more clearly at Fifth Avenue. Looking at a lady, Yang expresses his disgust. He points out that her face is not looking attractive. Indirectly, he intends to prove that these women also look like apes. Holy smokes, what a mug! Go hide yourself before the horses shy at you. Gee, pipe the henny on that one. Say yours, you look like the stern of a ferry boat, paint and powder, all dolled up to kill. Next heading, his faith in dignity of labor. Yang firmly believes in dignity of labor. In his opinion, the rich traveling in cabins of the ship have to do nothing with the miseries of stalkers. Yang claims that stalkers are better than those rich passengers. One of the stalkers is stronger than all of them, but none of them can ever bear to spend a minute in the heat of the stokehold. If he enters, he would grow faint and a stretcher would be required to take him out. It proves that stalkers are superior to the rich travelers. These rich men are no better than a useless load on the ship. We are better men than they are, ain't we? Sure, one of us guys could clean up the whole mob with mitt. Put one of them down here for one watch in the stokehold. What did happen? They did carry him off on a stretcher. Damn boats don't amount to nothing. They are just baggage. Yang claims that stalkers are superior to the rich passengers traveling in luxurious cabins of the ship, who are like worthless load without any utility. Putting stress on the importance of labor, he asks what the driving force of the ship is. It is certainly the hard work done by stalkers. It proves the ship is theirs and they belong to it, while the rich passengers' contribution is nil to the ship. He clarifies that the ship seems to be hell to those talkers who have lost their courage. The ship is driven by the force of brave talkers. They make the ship run. They belong to the ship. It does not belong to cowards like Long, who have no spirit to work. Who makes this old tub run? Ain't it us, guys? Well then, we belong, don't we? We belong and they don't. That's all. As for this being hell, oh nuts, you lost your nerve. That's what. This is a man's job, get me? It belongs. It runs this tub. No stiffs need apply, but you are a stiff, see? You are yellow, that's you. Next heading, his devotion to duty, sense of belonging. Yank is wholeheartedly devoted to duty. He has a strong sense of belonging. He rebukes stalkers like Long and Paddy. In his opinion, they don't belong while he belongs. Those who have no devotion to duty are dead. Yank rejects Paddy's viewpoint by saying that an old man knows nothing about the present. His strength and courage are reduced by the growing age. In a way, he is dead, but Yank, being young, acts as a man alive. Yank pleads for stalkers and enhances their importance by saying that they belong to the ship. They move it. They run it at a high speed. On account of their hard labor, the ship covers the long distance of 25 knots in an hour. Old ship could never imagine, never ever imagine, of such a high speed. Paddy is an old man. He can't work so heavily. He feels confused. Whatever he tells about romantic nights and days, stars and moons, suns and winds, fresh air and fair weather is meaningless in present time when people long for speed and being young. Yank represents that Paddy and old man enjoy himself in rest and dreams. He is outdated. He does not belong to the ship. Hey, you old harp. Hey, yours guys. Say, listen to me. Wait a moment. I gotta talk. See, I belong and he don't. He's dead, but I am living. Listen to me. Sure, I am part of the engines. Listen to me. Sure, I am part of the engines. Why the hell not? They move, don't they? They are speed, ain't they? They smash trouble, don't they? 25 knots an hour. That's going some. That's new stuff. That belongs. Yank clarifies why Paddy regards the ship as hell. He is old and weak. He can work, but not heavily. He can't breathe in cold dust and excessive heat of the stokehold. He does not belong to the ship. He belongs to the past. But Yank is a young man. He is not troubled by the engines, the cold dust and the smoke. He does not feel any problem in taking breath in smoke and shallowing cold dust. It gives him energy to work more and more. It nourishes him like food. Being young, he is adapted himself to the excessive heat of the stokehold. He enjoys himself here by thinking that his labor has produced so much of heat. On account of this labor, the ship is producing smoke with a roaring sound. He has become a part of the ship. He feels quite comfortable here. He does not know if there is any world outside the ship. He is devoted to his duty. Next heading is positive attitude to work. According to Yank, stalkers ought to have a positive outlook towards their work. Then the labor done does not tire the person. Paddy is tired of hard work, for he does not belong to the ship, otherwise he should have a sense of affection to it. Yank inspires his fellow stalkers to take the ship for their baby. Now, the work will look amusing like a game. Yank, come on you guys, get into the game. She's getting hungry. Pile some grub in her. Throw it into her belly. Come on now, all of you. Yank has firm belief that stalkers belong to the ship that is like their baby. They feed it and make run at a high speed. Yank, that's the stuff. Let her have it. All together now. Sling it into her. Let her ride. Shoot the piece now. Call the toin on her. Drive her into it. Feel her move. Watch her smoke. Speed, that's her middle name. Give her coal, you guys. Coal, that's her booze. Drink it up, baby. Let's us see you sprint. Dig in and gain a lap. There she goes. Next heading, his oversensitive nature. Yank is oversensitive by nature. The ingenious whistle is unbearable to him. He thinks that it challenges his sincerity. Yank is devoted to his duty. The ingenious comes with Mildred and by whistling informs his arrival. Yank thinks by whistling the engineer is asking him to work. He grows angry. Yank, come down and I'll murder you, pulling that whistle on me. He is sensitive enough to take Mildred's reaction deep at heart. He grows disinterested in all activities. He does not wash his body. He does not take dinner. Yank claims that he is thinking. Therefore, he has no time for meaningless activities. All stalkers know that Yank is not normal. Mildred's visit to Stockholm and her reaction to Yank's appearance have made a deep effect on Yank. He is lost in deep thinking. Long and Paddy interpret the incident in their own ways. Paddy claims in a sarcastic tone that Mildred had fallen in love with Yank at the first sight. Seeing Yank's appearance, her face had grown pale and she covered her eyes with her hands to save herself from a horrible sight. Her attitude suggested that she feared as if she were seeing a great hairy ape out of cage of the zoo. Long tells him that Mildred had visited the Stockholm to see how her slaves work, for she belongs to the capital class. Yank declares that he would kill her. Long advises him not to be a criminal, but Yank is not ready to forget that she regarded him as a hairy ape. Ain't she the same as me? Hairy ape. Oh, I will show her I am better than her, and she only know it. I belong and she don't. See? I move and she's dead. 25 knots an hour. That's me. That carries her, but I make that. She is only baggage. Sure. It shocks Yank very deep that Mildred regarded him as a hairy ape. He is determined to take revenge and rushes to the door. All fear a violent action. Next heading, his sense of alienation. His sense of alienation. Yank is deeply shocked after knowing that Mildred regarded him as a hairy ape. Now he begins to believe in Long's theory of class conflict, that capitalists are responsible for the miseries of poor workers. Yang decides to take revenge from Mildred. For the purpose, Long takes him to Fifth Avenue. Yang thinks Mildred would be there. Long tells Yang that he has brought him there to show how the capitalists lead a luxurious life. In fact, it is not a personal matter between Yang and Mildred. It is much higher issue, an eternal conflict between the labor and the capital. Yank represents poor workers, and Mildred or her father Douglas stands for capitalist. Long intends to make Yank conscious of this class conflict. In this conflict, all workers stand in his back, just as all capitalists support Douglas. It is not a duel between two individuals, but a war between two classes. It enrages Yank and makes him resolute to take revenge. Yank's uncontrolled behavior goes on. At last he picks up a quarrel with a gentleman who calls police. A whole platoon of policemen rush in on Yank. He tries to fight but fails. Next heading, his quest for identity, scorn for steel. While in prison, Yank develops scorn for steel. He finds that prison bars, chains, locks, and other things too are made of steel. He made this cage, steel. It don't belong, that's what. Cages, cells, locks, balls, bars. That's what it means. Holding me down with him at the top. But I will drive trouble. Fire, that melts it. I will be fire under the heap, fire that never goes out. Yank decides to break all things made of steel. He gets success in bending the iron bars of his cage. The guard is surprised and remarks that a man can't do it. Yank replies that a hairy ape can do it. He accuses the guard for being coward and declares that he is getting out of cage. He knows that no guard can stop him. Thus, the strength that was being utilized in the stokehold of the ship for a constructive purpose is being wasted in lawless activities just because of a childish action by Mildred. Seeing the iron bars bended, the guard is shocked, for a man can't have so much power. Hearing it, Yank remarks that a hairy ape can do it. After having a talk with other prisoners, Yank begins to believe that IWW can be helpful to him if he wishes to destroy steel, its making and its products. Having attained the membership of IWW, Yank asks the secretary to help him in destroying all the factories of steel. Dynamite, blow it often the oath, steal all the cages, all the factories, steamers, buildings, jails, the steel trust, and all that makes it go. Yang says that he wishes to destroy president of the steel trust. The secretary gives a signal and Yang is thrown out of the office. Yang complains that these people have no interest in doing real reform by solid action. They think a worker is happy if his working hours are cut short or his wages are increased. It is wrong. A policeman comes and asks Yang to go away, otherwise he would get him arrested. Next heading, a goodbye to the human world. Yang bids a goodbye to the human world where he fails in identifying himself with anybody. He feels that he is a stranger there. No one needs him. He finds it better to leave it for the animal world. He begins to believe that he belongs to the hairy ape. Yang visits the monkey house to meet the hairy ape. Yang takes it for his brother and shows great sympathy to it. Yang is not accepted anywhere in human society. In the beginning, the hairy ape seemed to be an abusive term to him, but now he takes pride in it and visits the monkey house at the zoo. He reaches the hairy ape and takes him to be his brother. Yang opens the cage and asks the hairy ape to come out of the cage to shake hands with him. He proposes to take the ape for a walk up to Fifth Avenue. He hopes the ape will help him in destroying all things present there. Yang knows there all things belong to capitalists. Thus, he will be able to take revenge with the help of the hairy ape. Yang, pardoned from the governor, step out and shake hands. I will take you for a walk down Fifth Avenue. We will knock them often the oath and croak with the band playing. Come on, brother. Next and the last heading, his tragic death. The hairy ape disappoints Yang by hugging him so strongly that his ribs are crushed and a cry comes out of his mouth. The ape throws him in the cage and goes away in darkness. Yang realizes that the ape hugged him like Zabisco, a champion wrestler. Yang has no complaint against the ape's violent behavior. His heart is broken with the thought that even the ape does not accept him as his brother. It shows that Yang does not belong to him. Yang say the author match him with Zabisco. He got me all right. I am trouble. Even him didn't think I belonged. Yang calls all ladies and gentlemen to come close to him, for he is not an ordinary creature. He only and the only in the world, for none belongs to him, and he belongs to neither human beings nor apes. He is dying, therefore, he is asking them not to miss the opportunity, for then after they would only hear about him, but his sight would not be available. It is a great irony that even in these circumstances he is able to establish his superiority on account of being the one and only genuine gorilla, the hairy ape, brought from an unknown forest. He is sure people would be interested in having a look at him after knowing that he is a strange creature. Yank, ladies and gents, step forward and take a slant at the one and only, his voice weakening, one and original hairy ape from the wilds of. The character sketch of Yank is over.